Hello and welcome to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore. I'm John Charles, and today I'm delighted to have with us one of my favorite authors, Jessie Q. Sutanto, whose new book is I'm Not Done With You Yet. Before we begin, I'd like to let those tuning in know that the Poison Pen does have copies of Jessie's new book as well as her backlist, and we would be happy to hold a copy or copies for you or put them in the mail. Just go online to the Poison Pen or give us a call, and we'll be happy to connect you with these truly fabulous reads. Now I'd like to welcome Jessie.
Hi, thank you so much for having me again. I think this is like my third event with the Poison Pen.
So. I think so. You keep trying to get out. We keep trying. We keep dragging you back. To paraphrase that movie line.
It's always my favorite.
Oh, that's nice of you to say. Why don't we begin by having you tell us a little bit about yourself prior to becoming a published author, because you have a rather colorful backstory.
So I'm here in Jakarta, Indonesia. But I moved around a lot as a kid. I grew up in Singapore and did my undergrad in California and then my master's in Oxford. And when I graduated from Oxford, I was like, I am hot shit. You know, I have a master's in creative writing from Oxford freaking university. Publishers are going to be knocking down my door, begging for a manuscript. That did not happen. I wrote book after book and they all got rejected. It took me like 10 more years after I graduated to actually get my first publishing deal. So that was a very humbling experience.
And that was one of your YA novels? That was your first published book?
Yeah, that was for The Obsession, which sold in a very, very small deal. So I thought, for sure, you know, it was just gonna tank. It was just gonna go into oblivion. But it ended up doing really, really well. So that was a very pleasant surprise.
Which brings us now to your new book. What can you tell us about I'm Not Done With You Yet? And this is gonna be tricky because we don't wanna give away any of the twists. There's some really killer ones in the book. But what should readers who might be interested in it know about the book?
So first thing that I want people to know about the book is that it came about because I had an argument with my husband about tidying up. And after that, I was so annoyed and he didn't understand why I was annoyed. So I wrote this scene about a husband and wife arguing about tidying up. And that actually became the first chapter of the book. And after I wrote the scene, I sat back and I was like, this is actually pretty good. And so then I went and wrote a whole book around it. And so it delights me that, you know, the book kind of came about after an argument, because everything I do out of spite. It's very on brand. So the book is about Jane, who is a self-diagnosed sociopath. And she comes across this a very enchanting woman, Thalia, during her graduate degree course in Oxford. And she becomes obsessed with Thalia because Thalia is like everything she's ever wanted to be. And of course, the obsession kind of spirals out of control and things happen, very bad things. So I don't think I can give much more away.
No, though she does reconnect with Thalia after a period of time, and that's when things really start to get interesting for the reader. Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you, you talked about your husband inspiring it. You also wrote in the acknowledgments something that I found fascinating. You said, I think it's next to impossible to exist in this world as someone who identifies as a woman and not be enraged time and time again. This book is the result of all that anger and bitterness at the inequalities of our society. So basically, the book was fueled by rage.
And you know, pettiness. Yeah, I think so, because I just see that inequality like everywhere in every aspect of life, and even in books. I used to love reading suspense thrillers. They're my favorite genre to read. But for like a very long time, I kind of had to stop reading them because they always had, you know, rape and murder of female characters to kind of just thrill the readers, I guess. And it wasn't, I feel like, until Gone Girl came about and kind of shook the genre up that, you know, I felt like, okay, I'm going to read a suspense. So I always thought like, well, if and when I do write a suspense thriller, I want to kind of flip it on its head and give the women kind of like roles that traditionally male characters have had, where they kind of do whatever they want. And then the male characters kind of get treated the way that female characters usually are treated in suspense thrillers.
Yeah, but you definitely have some very strong female protagonists in this book, each kind of acting in their own interests. And you also are very good at conveying, I mean, Jane especially, I never thought I would identify with a sociopath, although I guess to say antisocial disorder or whatever the correct term is. But just reading about her being so frustrated by her husband and his inability to pick things up and why he thought, I can see why she'd really want to pick up a frying pan or something and get rid of him. She's very good at conveying that kind of emotional, visceral connection.
Oh my God. That's so funny. I'm going to have to have my husband watch this later.
Well, it's, I mean, I think it's really tricky, and I think you succeed in a way, because how do you get a reader to become invested, to really root for, in a sense, someone who is not a good person? I mean, other authors have done, you mentioned Gillian Flynn, Patricia Highsmith. I remember reading the Tom Ripley books and thinking, why am I feeling sorry for this guy who's killing people? And you do, because you kind of, you're able to put yourself, I guess, in their shoes.
Yeah, I've always loved that. Like, I always love that kind of very torn feeling of like, oh, this person is so bad and they should really, you know, be caught and put behind bars away from society. But I really don't want them to be caught.
Yeah, I guess another example would be Killing Eve, where you're from television, where you're not sure why you want these women to succeed. You also, there was another part to the book that I found fascinating. It was the dedication. You said it was to Lori Elizabeth Flynn, my soul twin, without whom I would not have the courage to even start this book. Can you give us a little bit of background on that? Because she's an amazing writer in her own respect.
Oh, she so is. So we got to know each other. I think it was in 2020. And it was, I was reading an early copy of her, adult debut, The Girls Are All So Nice Here. And, I kept like harassing her and being like, oh my God, this is so good. Oh my gosh. So we became friends and, we just have so much in common. We talk, to each other every day and, you know, I told her that adult suspense is my favorite genre to read. And she kept being like, well, why don't you write one? And I was like, no, I can't. I don't think I have the skill to write one. And she was like, no, you do. And she said something which I always remembered. She was like, I'll be with you every step of the way. And, you know, I'll virtually hold your hand while you write one. And so then when the argument with my husband happened and I wrote like one chapter, I was like, oh, and I told her, I was like, oh my gosh, I think I will actually write a book. And she was like, yes, do it. And she really was with me every step of the way. So I just love that this book, which is about like toxic friendship, kind of came about from a very healthy Friendship.
Supportive one, yes.
Yeah.
The other thing that I found, well, there's many things, but one of the other things that I found fascinating about I'm Not Done With You Yet is it's also a book about writing and the creative process. And as a reader, I'm not sure I completely understand that, but I really started to feel I could understand what a writer is going through. Did any of your own experiences with agents, publishers, writing groups, writing programs somehow make their way into the book, though a bit changed?
Oh, yeah, totally. So when my agent was reading it, she had so many comments about the, so at one point, the main character, she goes to a writing retreat. And she meets a lot of other authors who are kind of like at the top of their game. And she feels very, you know, she's a very bitter and resentful character anyway. So she makes all of these like horrible observations about them. And my agent was like, just laughing so hard at the entire section. And she was like, oh, my God, this is killing me. Because I had like every I feel like stereotype of a writer in there, you know, the YA writer, the nonfiction you know, influencer writer, the very serious like literary writer. So I had a lot of fun with it, but it wasn't like, it wasn't based on anyone specific, but I just knew, you know, okay, I'm having way too much fun with this.
It really cut very, I'm sure, cut close to the bone for some people, but you have such a wonderful, sharp sense of humor. One of the things that from that section that I loved was you wrote, you're talking about one of the other authors. Then there's Kurt Fenton, New York Times darling, whose love stories, not romance, when men write romance, classified as love stories. So they're taken much more seriously than those silly things women write. That's so, so on the mark. I mean, it's just, you're totally got that.
Yeah, I mean, that was actually, I think that's an actual ongoing thing that I notice a lot. Because I am in like a writing group where a lot of us write romance, and a lot of them are, you know, talk about how once your book gets kind of identified as romance, then the advance that you get is lower than if it was a love story. So I always just kind of find it interesting that that still happens, because I know like romance is, I think it's the biggest selling genre. Yeah. So, you know, it kind of kills me that people who write romance aren't just getting gobs of money right off the bat.
You also include some scenes in Oxford when Jane and Thalia are in the writing program. Are some of the things that happen there also things that she went through at Oxford, like those spontaneous writing exercises where the teacher just says, write for 30?
Yes. Yes. Oh, my goodness. They just like get right into it. Like first session, like, we're going to do 10 minutes of free writing. And it was so funny. One of my classmates actually wrote something like, his heart was thudding, you know, his mouth was dry. Oh my God, everyone's pens are moving so quickly. And we had a good laugh at that. But yeah, it was a very intensive program. And one thing about me as an author is that I'm very lazy, so I don't like having to do too much research. Mm-hmm. So that's why, primarily, that's why it's half of the book is set in Oxford, because I'm like, well, you know, I went there, so I don't need to do that much research.
Well, you capture it beautifully, and we will add for anyone listening in that you did research the sociopathic parts of the book. That was not based on,
oh, yes,
on really. But you also capture, I mean, publishing and writing can be such a cutthroat business and game, and readers may not recognize this, but another thing that you had written that I thought really was insightful in its way is you said, anyone who thinks publishing is a meritocracy is not in publishing, because to Yes, to a certain extent, it does depend on writing well, but that is only half the battle won. It also depends on the market, though what the market is actually is, no one can tell you. And that's exactly right. Mm-hmm. It's like you talk to publishers, you talk to agents, you tell them, you know, what, well, the market. And it's like, well, what market? The.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's so complicated and it's always changing. So no one really knows what it currently wants, I guess. And every time there's a hit, then there's always kind of like a glut of that thing. Like when, you know, the Hunger Games happened, everyone is like, oh my gosh, we want another YA dystopian. And then for the next year or two, like nothing but YA dystopian coming out. And then everyone got sick of it. So, and it's very quick if you think about it, because like writing a book, for most people, it takes like a year or at least to write a book. So then by the time you're like, oh, well, I have a YA dystopian, you know, it's too late. The market has moved on. So it is very cutthroat, I think.
Yeah, it's a valuable lesson for aspiring writers. Don't try to write to the market because you'll never catch it. Now, some of your readers, especially fans of your Anti series, are probably going to be a bit surprised, if not even more, by the darker tone of I'm not done with you yet. But I think actually, if you go back through your literary oeuvre, your darker side has always been there. I mean, I remember reading The Obsession and thinking she's really playing with some dark themes there.
Yeah, because I actually started writing darker books. They're YA to begin with. And I didn't actually start writing comedy up until my seventh book. So my seventh book was my middle grade fantasy, Theo Tan and the Fox Spirit. That was what introduced me to comedy. Because I was like, well, kids like humorous things, you know, I like humorous things, so let's try to be more humorous. And then I was like, oh, this is fun. And so Dal A for Aunties is actually my ninth book. You know, and then people kind of like see me as a comedy writer, but I'm kind of like, well, you know, like if you read Dal A for Aunties, you would also see the dark themes. I mean, they're basically desecrating a corpse throughout the book. So I hope that readers are not too surprised.
No, I think you've pretty much captured, you have both a dark and a light side as a writer, but I think, and I could be wrong, the one kind of unifying thread is the humor that's in your writing. It can be zany and madcap. It can be sardonic and sharp. And you say that you didn't intend to write humorous or comic, but you have a flair for it. Is it something you really have to work at?
I like to think I'm pretty funny as a person. Well, don't tell me if, you know, you disagree. just let it exist in my head. So I feel like kind of growing up, that was something I worked hard to kind of, you know, like grow into. Like that was my thing, and how I get people to like me. So so I think it's just natural that it would come out in my writing.
Actually, and if I understand correctly, you even kind of were developing it early on when you had a food blog.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. Oh wow, I'm so impressed. Yeah, I had like a food blog, and I was trying to you know, make it be like funny and relatable, I guess. I burnt out you know, with a food blog. But I think I kept up with it for like a year or something.
Let's talk a little bit about your writing process, because I'm not sure, because you write such different kinds of books. You write YA books, suspense thrillers, comic crime novels, middle grade fiction. is the process always the same, or do you have to fine tune it for each new project? Because I'm thinking a book like one of the Auntie's books, you can kind of pretty much let the characters loose and they're taking you through the story. But with I'm Not Done With You Yet, I cannot stress this enough. You really throw some killer twists in there to the point where I'm getting to the end and I'm thinking, you totally got that past me and I didn't see it coming. It's so well inserted in the story. So that must take a lot of planning. Or do you just, for all of your books, just kind of open a page up and start writing?
So I used to do that. I used to just have like an idea and then I'll be like, okay, well then I'm going to write it. But what happens when I do that is that I write myself into corners and then I have to scrap and redo entire chapters, which is so painful. Mm-hmm. So now I just don't do that anymore. I am a very meticulous planner. I always have to have like a complete synopsis before I write and a chapter by chapter outline. So even like Dal A for Aunties, I had it outlined and I just knew what was going to happen. And I know people are like, when I first started writing, my characters would often kind of misbehave, you know, and just do whatever they want. But not anymore. Ever since I became a mom, I'm like a stereotypical Chinese mom where I'm like, oh, you think you're gonna do that, do you? That's really cute that you think that. So my characters are so well behaved. They stick to the outline because they know that I can kill any character I want.
Especially in your suspense novel. Yeah, I think you actually have been quoted as saying, let characters dictate their story to you, but thrillers mm-hmm. need structured plotting. So you have to have both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That. How do you approach each new project? Are you trying to balance writing for different markets, different publishers? I know you say writers usually do one book a year, but I think you're probably exceeding that goal.
Yeah, so I write, on average, I write 3 books a year. I think that's a good, it's a good pace for me. It gives me time to have a break in between each book. It was very different when I first started, when I first sold The Obsession. Mm-hmm. Then at that time, I could still be like, okay, well, I feel like next I'm going to do this, next I'm going to do that. But now that I have contracts in place, what I write next is pretty much dictated by the contracts that I have currently.
That's great. One of the other things that I think is valuable about your books, what you bring to publishing and to readers, is you kind of open the door to other cultures. There's sometimes a lot of misperception, I think, or misunderstanding. Mm-hmm. I know about especially Asia and Indonesia and that mm-hmm. part of the world. And in a lot of your books, you kind of show readers a clearer picture of that part of the world.
Oh, I'm so happy to hear that. Yeah, totally. Oh my gosh, when I was in Oxford, I remember coming across quite a few, as you said, you know, misconceptions. Like I was talking to this really sweet lady, this English, white English lady, and she was saying about how, like, oh, you know, Asian women, they're so, you know, kind of like more submissive and quiet and polite. And I was like, oh man, you have not met my mom and my aunts. You would be horrified. But, you know, I just felt like, okay, I really need to write a story about them. And my husband, he's English. And when we moved here, he was like, you should write a story based on your family. And I was like, really? They're so boring. No one wants to read about that. And he was like, oh, trust me, they are not boring. So, and then we kind of went through a lot of the things, like, because to me, it's just them being them. And so I was like, well, okay, what is it to you that you find, you know, interesting or funny or, you know, that really just stood out to you? So we kind of went like point by point, what surprised my husband most.
Let's talk a little bit about Jesse as a reader, because you've mentioned suspense is a big passion of yours. Are you as eclectic in your reading tastes as you are as a writer? Do you read across genres? Do you try to find just certain niches that appeal to you as a reader?
Mm-hmm. Definitely. So I think when I was in my 20s, I really loved reading fantasy. That was all I read, was fantasy. And then I went through Terry Pratchett. Like, he became my favorite author. I was rereading his books. I think the witches books, I've read them each at least 6 times. I think, you know, a lot of my humor probably came from that as well. Then I moved on to the suspense thrillers. But when I was, before I wrote Dial A for Aunties, I spent almost a whole year reading mostly rom-coms, because I knew I wanted to write Dial A for Aunties. And I kept saying, you know, oh, it's going to be a romance, which is really funny because I actually forgot about the romance.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, I need to learn how to write a romance. So I read nothing but romance for a year. And it was mostly Christina Lauren's books, because they're just so delightful. Mm-hmm. And now I'm back to reading mostly suspense thrillers, because I listen to audiobooks a lot. That's, you know, a lot of the times that's what I have time for, is when I'm cooking. Then I'm listening to an audiobook, and I find it really hard to follow when it's a fantasy audiobook, because like the names are spelled very differently, you know, and I can't follow it. So I'm like, okay, just suspense thrillers for now. And then when I have more time to actually sit down and read a book, then I will probably go back to reading fantasy.
That's great. I think if I remember correctly, the witches kind of served as a source of inspiration for the aunties.
Mm-hmm, yeah, because I love them so much. So yeah, I would say that a lot of my older female characters, they're a mix of Terry Pratchett's witches and my own aunts and uncle.
What does your family think about your books? Do you find them telling you, why did you write me as that character? I'm not that person.
No, so I was very careful to kind of take, you know, miscellaneous traits from everyone and kind of mix them all up and put them into the characters, to the point where when my mom read Dial A for Aunties, she was like, well, this is not at all like our big aunt. And I was like, no, because the big aunt in the book is actually based on this auntie in real life. And my mom was like, oh my god, that is totally her, you know. That she didn't realize it before. So I was like, good job, you know, past self, you did that well.
You've been writing now for a while. If you could go back to when you were first starting out as a writer, knowing what you know about publishing and the business, what advice would you give yourself?
Oh my gosh. You know, I actually think about that a lot, because before I managed to get published, I was like, oh, if only I could go back in time and do, you know, XYZ differently. But then now I actually have like a publishing career. So then I'm like, well, I don't know if I would tell myself anything different, because then that might change things. So I sometimes think like, oh, I would have told myself, you know, just try to be more disciplined, try to write fast and whatever. But then when I think about it, I'm like, well, but Crazy Rich Asians really open the door for a lot of us. And I feel like without the success of Crazy Rich Asians, I don't know that Dal A for Aunties would have been as splashy of a deal as it was. So then, you know, timing really matters. And I'm like, well, maybe, you know, there's a reason why it took me 10 years to get published, because it was the right timing. So I have to say, I wouldn't like give myself any advice, because I'll just let myself bumble along. And
three books a year, I'm not sure you could write any faster on that particular front. Before we run out of time, you do have lots of fans and readers tuning in, so we want to get to some of their questions. One of your readers wanted to know how much input you have into the design of your books, like the covers, the titles. Is that all you, or is that strictly your publisher?
So it's mostly my publisher, but I've been really lucky that they've been so nice about taking my input. So when I first got the cover for Dial A for Aunties, I was like, oh my gosh, I love it. But can you change the font of my name? I want it to be in cursive. And they did it. They changed it and they sent it back to me. And I was like, this is terrible. Why did you listen to me? I'm not a cover designer. Change it back. So then they changed it back. And after that, I was like, you know what? They know what they're doing. So I'll just leave them to it.
Well, it sounds like a good collaboration. Another reader say they loved your new book and they wondered if you have a core story to all of your books.
I would say probably throughout most of them, it's probably like women behaving badly and getting away with it.
That's probably a good analysis of the core story. Another reader would like to know how much research was involved for your new book, I'm Not Done With You Yet, in terms of the psychology. Like, I didn't realize that I used the word sociopath so often that I guess that's no longer the acceptable term.
Yeah, so my best friend, my college best friend, very, very conveniently is a psychologist. Genuinely has a PhD in psychology. So I was harassing her all the time and being like, but okay, but so someone, you know, because there were so many layers of psychology in the book, I had to kind of go through with her one by one, where I was like, you know, so what is, well, first of all, she was like, well, the correct term is this is antisocial, etc. And I was like, well, how would someone behave if someone actually, you know, has that? How would someone behave if they want to have that in a way, you know? And then how would someone behave if they have these other mental health issues? So I should have dedicated the book to her, now that I think about it.
Well,
she did so much work with me on it. So
there's always next book.
Yes.
You were really, really good about, for a layperson or someone who knows nothing about, being able to understand Jane and why she was the character she was, because she really did try to modulate herself, to kind of hold back on her impulses. She was snapping that rubber band on her wrist, I guess, and all those other things. So, I mean, you do kind of feel a little bit of empathy or sympathy for her.
Yeah, I'm so happy whenever people message me to say, like, I relate so hard to Jane.
Another one of your readers wants to know, is your process different for writing yet for young adults versus adults, I guess, in terms of how you approach it?
Yes and no. So I don't change anything in terms of like writing. I don't like, you know, thinking of it as like, oh, now I have to simplify things or anything. But I do think of boundaries. That's where I start with. Like the boundaries that a teenager would have, are so different from what an adult would have. So first of all, they would be in school. So their timetable is massively different. So I just kind of start from there. And then that generally informs the story and where it needs to go. And then I also feel like there's like a ticking clock on me writing young adult, because I read my reviews, and most of them are, you know, really great, and I really enjoy them. And then once in a while with the YA books, they'll be like, oh, the teen speak is so cringy. So I feel like, oh no, I've been exposed. I'm not a teen. So I just feel like, oh no, I think, you know, at some point it's going to be so cringy that I won't be able to write young adult anymore, which is sad.
That I think can be a real stumbling block for authors, because the lingo, the slang, whatever words they're using changes so often that are out of step or out of touch with young adults. Another one of your many fans would like to know what news you can tell us about cinematic or television opportunities for your books, because I think a couple of them have been optioned, if that's the correct word.
Yes. So very excitingly, Dalia for Aunties is with Netflix, and Vera Wong's Unsolicited Advice is with Warner Brothers, with Oprah and Mindy Kaling producing. And I'm Not Done With You Yet has actually been optioned as well, but we haven't announced it yet. So I'm very excited to announce that one. Yes. And it's with someone very, very exciting as well. So, you know, take that, my enemies. But nothing is happening because of the strike. But before the strike, I can tell you that we had a finished script for Dial A for Aunties. So that's very exciting. I'm really eager for the strike to end really well for the unions. So, you know, fingers crossed.
Yeah, it does impact a lot of different areas. And I guess I have a question just when you mentioned that. I know writers, screenwriters, television writers are concerned about, and I'm probably going to get it wrong because I'm terrible at technology, but that AI. Where computers take over. That can be scary for a novelist too, can't it?
Oh my gosh, it is so scary. My husband is a bit of a tech bro, unfortunately. He was a scientist in England, but then when we moved to Indonesia, there's like no like sciencey jobs aside from like teaching. So then he had to go to tech. So people like to be like, oh my gosh, you took a scientist and turned him into a tech bro. That's terrible. But yes, I'm very sorry about that. He was working on very good things when we were in Oxford. But anyway, so I asked him, I was like, oh my gosh, you know, it's my job in jeopardy because of AI. And he was like, I think not in your career lifetime that, you know, he was, I think you should be safe. But I do think that by the time our kids are grown up, I don't know if being an author anymore is going to be like a thing. And he was like, you know, because right now, he said, you know, authors that already kind of have books out and like a good fan base, they're probably okay. But then the newer authors, you know, that nobody knows about, well, you know, once AI gets good enough that it does start writing really good and complex stories, then people will be like, oh, well, I might as well read this other story. So it's so depressing because I have daughters, you know, and my 7-year-old, she's always like, oh, I want to be an author just like you. And I'm kind of like thinking, yeah, I don't know if that's still going to be a career choice when you're grown up.
Yeah, technology gives and takes away in both respects.
Yeah.
Another one of your fans has a question about Vera Wong. If mm-hmm. I remember correctly, that there's a lot about tea in the book because the character sells teas. Is that a particular hobby, fascination of yours? How did it make its way into that book?
So my maternal grandfather, he was very traditional. So all my grandparents are from China. And so he was very much like, my granddaughters will know how to properly brew and serve tea for their future husbands, which I have never brewed and served tea for my husband, because if I did, he would probably freak out and be like, is this poisoned? but I did grow up learning about Chinese tea. And, we did a family trip to China where we went to a tea farm, and I learned even more about tea. And then they had like a blind taste test afterwards, where they were like, oh, you know, rate it from like the most expensive and high quality to like lowest quality. And I got everything right. And even my grandfather didn't. So I was like, booyah. So it's like one of my useless, little life knowledge thing. So when I got the idea for Vera Wong, I was like, yes, finally, you know, my time has come to show off this useless knowledge of mine.
Have you ever thought about partnering with a tea company to come up with a Vera Wong style or
brand? Oh my gosh, that would be so fun. No, I have never thought of that, but why have I not is the question. You know what? I love that so much. I'm going to ask my agent about that.
Yeah, be a great giveaway or some kind of merchandising aspect. Mm-hmm. Another one of your fans would like to know, when you're not writing or being with your family, do you have any particular hobbies? What do you do if you have spare time?
So I've actually been working with my therapist on this, because she was like, you need a hobby. And I was like, I do, I really do. But my problem is that I have a bad habit of turning fun things into not fun things. So like, for example, I used to have drawing as a hobby, and then I, you know, go overboard with it where I'm like, okay, I have to do it right and whatever. So then another hobby of mine is gaming. And like right now I'm playing Overwatch 2. And then of course, you know, I turn it not fun again. Like, I'm like, oh my God, I have to get better at it. And I have to learn all of the moves that a grandmaster can make. And then it becomes like work. And my husband is like, why do you keep doing this? Just, it's a game. And I'm like, no, I need to be so good at it. So I'm probably going to get tired of Overwatch too soon, because it's so stressful. I'll move on to a different hobby. I'll tell you what it is when I find another one to ruin.
That'd be great. Another reader would like to know about your relationship with social media, what platforms you tend to favor. And I would add, how do you come up with those really clever, I want to say commercial, but I'm not sure that's the right word for your books, that the Anti series. I mean, you not only are a good writer, but you're a clever marketer.
Oh, thank you so much. So I used to be on Twitter, and then, you know, the whole thing happened. So now I'm mostly on Instagram at Jessie Q Sutanto. And I really love the Instagram community, because they're so funny. And I always do AMAs, especially when I'm traveling solo. So it's a really great way to kind of pass the time at the airport. And the questions people ask, like, I swear with each AMA I do, the questions become like funnier and more random. Like, I remember the last one of them was like, well, you said, ask me anything. So have you ever seen a shark egg? That is the best question ever. I love Instagram.
And you came up with the idea for your aunties commercials?
Oh my gosh, yes. Sorry.
That's all right.
So my mom and her friends kind of just got into it. I I asked them, you know, to dress up, and they did, and then they posed like the book cover, and then they were like calling out to my husband to like come act as the dead body for them to manhandle. I have to hand it to them. They really just, they understood the assignment. They took it, they ran with it. So yeah, I feature my mom in a lot of my videos.
That's great. Another question is really kind of interesting. I don't think I've seen it before. This particular reader would like to know, you've done a lot of events for your books, virtual and in person. What is the one question no one ever asks you that you wish someone would?
Oh my gosh, that's such a good question.
Yeah.
You know, something like, why are you such a genius? That would be nice. That would be nice to be asked.
How can you have written so many books yet still look so youthful? Things like that.
Oh my gosh. Yes, that would be a good one to be asked.
Another reader said that they would be interested. They've heard you've talked about your love of suspense fiction. Do you have a favorite suspense movie?
Ooh, movie. Wow. Okay. That's a really good question, because I don't usually get asked about movies. A suspense movie. I'm going to have to come back to this. Sure. Now my mind is just drawing a blank.
Well, while you think about it, I would say Gone Girl, the movie adaptation, was pretty good too. Equally as good.
Oh, it was so good.
Yeah.
It was so good, but I think, it's spoiled for me, because obviously I read the book before the movie, so I knew what was going to happen. And it was further spoiled for me because I watched it with my husband, and I just kept having to like look over and be like, you know, are you paying attention? Like, pay attention, this is going to be really important. I don't think he enjoyed it very much.
I guess there's a good piece of advice in that. Read Jesse's books before they become movies or television adaptations. Another reader would like to know if you, and this is up to you, can you tell us about what's coming next from you as an author? What would you like us to know?
So next up is actually my young adult rom-com, which I have here actually, because I just had an event for it. It's called Didn't See That Coming, and that it's going to be out in November. And I'm really excited because I actually wrote a love story. It's not a romance, it's a love story. And earlier this year, and that's going to come out in 2025, which is, you know, so far off, but I am so excited about it because it's another new genre for me. Because it's not suspense and it's not comedy. Mm-hmm. That is the one that I'm super excited about.
And you may not want to address this because it is far in the future, but you say it's not a comedy or things like that, but I'm guessing there's some humor to the love story. It's more on the romantic comedy.
Yeah, I hope there is some humor, but it's actually overall quite sad. And when I wrote it, I actually like cried while writing it. And I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. I want my money back. I'm never writing another sad love story.
that's interesting.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't have the tradition.
It's not fun.
Well, for those of us that are old enough to remember, there's always Eric Segal's love story, so we can reference that. Obviously, you're not old enough, Jesse, but there's a few out there that
I'll have to check it out.
Yeah. Love Means Never Having to Say You're Sorry comes from that book.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. It's a tearjerker, to be true. Another reader wants to know, if you do events, do you set them up through your publisher? How do your events work? I guess that's
mostly they are through my publisher. because, and there's a very good reason for this, and it's because my head is a mess, which is why, you know, I can write 3 books a year, but also it's a mess to organize things. So I just rely on my publisher to tell me, like, you know, hey, you have an event, you know, next week or whatever. And I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah. Thank you for the reminder. So that's how they happen.
another reader wants to know, do you find that your books, when they're marketed, are marketed to the right readers? Do you wish that there was some other way you could reach readers who might not pick up one of your books?
Oh my God, yes. So as some of you may know, TikTok is, you know, like where people really, really move books. But I suck at TikTok. I tried, I burned out. I just like, I don't really get that many views on TikTok. So it just kills me that there's this amazing marketing tool out there to reach like such a broad, you know, group of people who might otherwise not know about your books. And I just haven't cracked the TikTok code yet. So that one, one day I will. But aside from that, I feel like my publishers, they do such a great job. So, you know, again, I feel like I'm failing them by not really being active on TikTok. So, yeah, but I'm working on it.
Actually, I would be surprised if you don't conquer it. You're very good, which kind of ties into one of our last questions. This particular reader would like to know, you're so good at creating memorable characters. Do you have any drama or theatrical training in your background?
Yes, I do. Oh my gosh. I love it when like people ask this, because I did theater, like as a club in college, like throughout college I did it. So, and you know, it was just like a fun, hobby thing. And I never thought that one day I'm actually going to make good use of this, little fun thing. And so, when I see my daughters, when I look at them, like my 7-year-old, she's so shy. She's such an introvert. But she loves drama. And she was like, I think I want to join the drama club. And I was like, yes, do it. Cause I think acting, that might be a career that is still going on when you're older. And if social media is still around, then definitely you're going to need it. So yeah, good choice.
We're almost out of time, but before we have to leave, Jessie and our viewers, can you tell us how we can find out more about your books? Do you have a website? What's the best way to learn about Jessie and your novels?
So I would say the best way would be Instagram, because I'm just on there every day. And I do have a website, but I think it's out of date. I don't think I even have like I'm Not Done With You Yet up on the website, which is so bad. Okay, I will fix that at some point. So I think the website address is jessieqsutantoauthor.com, or maybe it's jessieqsutantobooks.com. One of them.
Or you could just Google Jessie Q. Sutanto. Yeah. I'm pretty sure it'll come up that way. We've run out of time. I can't believe how quickly it's gone by. I'd like to thank Jessie for joining us at the Poison Pen virtually and for writing such a truly fiendishly clever thriller, I'm Not Done With You Yet. It will leave you with your jaw on the floor if you're anything like me. I can't wait for her next book. Thank you, Jessie, for taking time to be with us.
Thank you so much for having me. And thank you again for being so flexible about everything.
You're very welcome. And thank everyone for tuning in to another virtual author event at the Poison Pen Bookstore.
Hello. We hope you're enjoying our programs and podcasts with authors. We'd like to expand them, and your help would be appreciated. Please make a donation at poisonedpenfoundation.org. 100% of the proceeds will go to help connect authors with readers in this difficult time. Thank you.